Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earl. I gotta be entirely honest with everybody, I feel like I got run over by a train. On a scale of 1 to 10, my energy right now at 8:30 in the morning is legitimately a 2.5. I have almost nothing left in the tank. So I need a little bit of grace today, if that's all right.
No.
No. And you had some medical issues too, so you're probably not feeling a 10 out of 10. But oh, welcome man. Anyways.
Yeah, it's been a... this week has been wild. Not bad, but wild.
No.
I think... Our Loki plans are curiously in flux, so we'll keep people posted on when we can hopefully do our preview episode. But we are going to talk a bit about what we're looking forward to in season two. So stick around to the end of this episode, which is focused primarily on Loki season one.
Yes,
where we'll kind of talk about what we're looking for in Loki season two, which premieres, if you're listening to this, when it releases in 3 days.
Right.
Crazy.
Absolutely insane. We say this all the time, but I need a little bit of grace if I slur more words than normal because of how I'm feeling, but don't take that as a lack of excitement for what's upcoming. This episode today is going to be four parts. Part one, catching you up on a few news things. Now, you need to inform me of this. Is the writer's strike, I think the writer's strike's officially over, right? Like we're done. Like I can click the celebration music or is there still
I think you can click the celebration music.
Let's go. Yes. Well, like I didn't know because there was a tentative agreement. Then they're like, well, as soon as it's signed the next day and I don't know. Then I was gone.
That's my understanding is that it's done.
Like we're resuming production on all this stuff? We're going?
I don't know. So I think the last thing I heard is that, because I haven't read the details of the, I don't even know if they had put out the details of the deal while it was still coming together. But I remember I saw in the article where they talked about the tentative deal being reached, that there were still kinks to be worked out in terms of like when things would resume. And in what way, okay. Which I guess makes sense. So I'm not sure that, like, it seems to me that the strike itself is over, but maybe the way things will resume is still under negotiation to some degree, but that could be totally wrong. I guess at any rate, it will probably take a second for things to get going.
You can tell we're just so informed over here right now. Wow. Either way, I think it's at least at minimum another massive step forward for us as fans, for us as a podcast, and for these writers and studios, because as soon as we can resume some of this stuff, that'll make next year a whole lot more fun. I really don't want another dead gap of 8 months for all content for a little while. So that's great news. Secondly, As Robbie mentioned, Loki season 2 premieres on October 6th, but technically October 5th at night at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and I couldn't be more excited for it. This is a really long story because, as you know, I've been traveling this week and some scheduling stuff, and basically I don't know if we're going to have a preview episode, having seen some of the episodes early or not. We're trying to work out a few of those details, but I'm not really worried about it because if it doesn't work out, it'll actually be really fun to just legit be on the same schedule as our audience back like the WandaVision days. So maybe we'll have a preview episode early next week. Otherwise, man, Thursday night, Robbie and I will be watching at 8 o'clock. Yep. Friday morning, Robbie and I will be recording. And then on the following Monday, every Monday during Loki, we're going to have our full breakdown ready for everybody. You know, watch it yourself, enjoy the weekend, think about it, and then come back and listen to our takes on it on Monday. So that's going to be the new schedule, and it's literally starting this week, which is why today's episode's perfect.
I got us an answer on the writer's strike question.
Okay, good. I love this.
So apparently the deal needs to be ratified by the union's members. So I think, I guess leadership, this is what they were able to put together. But there is going to be a vote on October 2nd and I guess again on October 9th. And once it's ratified, I think we're good.
Fact checking Robbie is becoming my favorite Robbie on this podcast. Last week you had a book to actually reference Taika Waititi's quotes, which is such a pro step up. And this week you have a Loki book. And now
which
you're
I did
fact
get to
checking
read last
live
at like 1 a.m. But I did get through it.
Oh wow. Because Robbie had texted me that you were nervous you weren't gonna get
Look at that.
Wow, they have some cool high-res images in there, huh?
Dude, I know, that's what I'm saying. I've looked at, like, sometimes I look at the, I mean, it's, you know, whether or not it's your thing. These are fun, though. Like, all these stats where it's, like, breaks down, like, the screen time that Loki's had, like, across the entire MCU.
Oh, wow.
It's that some is fun cool. stuff. Yeah.
That's that would be my kind of thing, even though I don't
read.
Yeah,
I think you'd enjoy it. It it's almost like the, it's like the assembled episodes, but kind of put into book form, but that also means you have the chance to get different kinds of information, and
which is why I think I'd like it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we had a chance to record three really fun throwback style episodes this last month. We are rewatching through the MCU in the off season of Loki, and we watched Eternals, Moon Knight, Thor, Love and Thunder. And then today, Loki, but those last three episodes were particular fun because Robbie and I have a soft spot for films that get a little bit blasted by people at first, and then we really enjoy finding the beauty in those movies. And so I really urge you to go back and listen to specifically at least last week's episode, but if you're just catching up or you're just finding this podcast, go listen to the last three episodes because that is Robbie and I's bread and butter right there. So catch up on those, but also it gets your mind kind of framed correctly for what we're about to do now, this next month. Go ahead, sorry.
First, I enjoyed those so much that I actually, we haven't talked about this yet, but I kind of want to start a little in defense of series here next time we're in an off season and just pick some more projects like that, whether that's stuff here in the MCU or if that's over on Screensaver. But it is fun. It's fun to go in and find the things about movies that you like that maybe other people don't or haven't considered. So that is like a
defense attorney style.
Yeah, that's my bread and butter.
Yeah, you're right. Just on paper, it's always more fun, I think, to take a movie like Dark World that's not viewed as good and find some fun and joy in it and bring it up in people's mind. That's way more fun than critically reacting to something we didn't love and bringing it down for people, for sure. But catch up on those episodes. Also, if you're trying to get your mind framed right, which I need to get my mind right, for Loki season 2, I created a 7-minute screen recap on YouTube that I am really proud of. It's just so 7 good. Minutes taking you through what has happened to this character thus far, and obviously nixing some of the stuff that happened a long time ago because of the time travel stuff and all that. But catching up on season one, mainly previewing season two, and just it's under 7 minutes. So if your friend or significant other or whatever, or parents haven't seen Loki season one, but they want to watch season two with you, 7 minute screen recap, everything you need to know about Loki season one on YouTube. And I'll lastly say, yeah, I don't have all the details yet, but we're hoping that Thursday night watches with Monday morning episodes can be a really fun thing. And we can maybe sometimes do some live chatting on Discord or occasionally record an episode live on YouTube or whatever that means. But basically what I'm trying to say is buckle up, because by reflecting on season one, we are about to also transition into new MCU content for the first time in a long time.
And just before we jump in, talking about kind of both what we have going on in the Friends from Work world, podcast-wise and beyond. Organic Press Books, our comics partner, is currently running a big sale on Dark Horse Comics, which everything that Organic Press Books puts out in general is already at a pretty crazy price. And so an added discount is something probably to take a look at. I should also point out that I think included in that sale is the Ninja Turtle comic that Greg is really trying to get me and the rest of the FFW community to read. I think he's gotten a few takers from some folks on the Discord. And I'm hearing that I've just never, like, I watched the Ninja Turtle stuff when I was little, like the quasi live action movies, which were fun. I've never really gotten into that world since then, but I know that there's a big following and some like legit writers have done stuff with those books. So that's there. There's also a lot of other stuff that is, we were just looking through up there for a really good price. And the last thing I'll say, more Friends from Work related, we are wrapping our first half of the Hickman read through. And I noticed the other day that they restocked that first omnibus, which was out of stock for a while. And it's there at like almost half off. So I would go for that. And then you can still catch up and finish with us before we take a little break kind of around the holidays. But while we're taking that break, we're also going to be in the comic book club doing our first like non-Marvel, non-superhero book in honor of Halloween coming. Candace and I are going to be talking through some horror comics for the first time on the podcast. And so we're starting with a book called The Nice House on the Lake by James Tinian. And you can get that in a couple of different ways on Organic Press Books. So you can either pre-order a really nice hardcover or just get the first volume. Go there if you're interested in trying that out with us, but ton of options. OrganicPressBooks.com. Remember, code Friends from Work.
And shout out to all the people that have been doing that. I salute you. I said that on Discord because I'm getting those emails that people are doing it, which I love so much. Great company. Okay, part two of today's episode. Let's talk about what works, what worked especially well on your rewatch of Loki season one, starting with the ending. I think the biggest takeaway for me from Loki season one is that the finale is the best finale they've ever made, and it's virtually flawless. And it's one of, I think, for me, three moments, like I referenced in our Moon Knight episode, that I had that elevated of a feeling, elevated chills, a moment I'll never forget. It's the way the entire finale had me glued to my seat or glued to the screen or both, and just locked in on what everything Jonathan Majors was saying. And then the disagreement between Loki and Sylvie. But then the moment when the camera pans out the window, you see the timeline branching and specifically Loki back in the TVA and Mobius saying, wait, hold on, slow down. Who are you? I assume you're from blah, blah, blah. And then Loki panic looking at the statues and it being just one statue of Kang. That moment for me is paralleled with a couple of WandaVision moments and Moon Knight episode four, the ending of that. That's it for me in the Marvel Disney Plus era. That's it. And I can't emphasize enough how cool that moment is combined with Natalie Holt's score. Like any flaws that I have with Loki throughout are instantly erased in my mind because of how strongly I felt like the plane was landed. And it should be noted that part of the reason I think that that plane is landed easier is because I do think it's always a little bit easier to land the finale when you know there's more content coming. When you know it's the Infinity War, it's easy to do an ending like that, have us all go, wow. It's a little bit harder for a show like Moon Knight or WandaVision if you don't know they're ever going to make more to fully end the whole thing in whatever it is, 4 hours of real runtime.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I wonder, I'm always curious when that decision was made. Like, because that was like the, that was a big reveal in the finale whenever kind of instead of a post-credit scene, it was just season two. But
I don't know that they had the decision to actually go into season two, but I do think there was a decision made early on that it could lead into the multiversal stuff so you can leave this open-ended. Like WandaVision, maybe they don't know if the character is going to be followed up on or when.
Although
they did the Doctor Strange things. That's a bad example too. Maybe Moon Knight's the better example.
And WandaVision's also different because they were, like, that was the end of that story. You know, like we were going to get Wanda again, but like the Vision, Westview, Monica Rambeau, like all of that was being wrapped.
Good point.
Which is like, I think we have to point out because a lot of the criticism around finales like that are how quickly they have to resolve all of that stuff and tell us like where Monica ends up and where Vision ends up and Agatha.
Whereas they don't have to do that.
At all. And that's part of the, that's the strength. It is very Infinity War-esque. I think that's a really good comparison because that was one of my big takeaways, and we'll kind of come back to this at the end of the episode, but how much we're left with questions. Like, I think at the time, it was almost done a disservice. We loved the finale then, so it's not that, but we had so much stuff coming out in 2021. Like, it was Loki. I think Black Widow came out like week 4 or 5 of Loki. And then we had
WandaVision
What If just around the corner. And like Eternals and Shang-Chi and No Way Home and Hawkeye all that year. So it was like, you know, Infinity War came out. And we had a while to be like, oh my gosh. Like, even Ant-Man and the Wasp was even several months after that. And that there was a lot of anticipation there just to get any follow-up because of Infinity War. And
which is why that post-credit scene is so powerful.
Right. But here, now that, you know, we're finishing this portion of the rewatch, and now that we have had this kind of break from MCU content, I think it was the first time I was like, man, yeah, we've got some legit cliffhangers here. And so I'm excited to talk about those in a little bit more detail. But I think that's a really good point about what makes this work particularly well.
This doesn't need a lot of breakdown, but I also think it should be noted that it's really unique in that it's one of the only finales that basically is based off dialogue, that they can save budget in any kind of special effects thing because they just put three actors in a room for the most part and had them talk. And it's crazy that I can leave feeling that glued to my screen when so much of the episode is actually just exposition. Once they meet Jonathan Majors, he basically just talks to them for, I want to say, I don't know, 17 minutes of just kind of explaining why he's there, why they're there, what should happen. And so how they pulled that off, how it works, I don't know. Props to them.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that makes this finale so unique to me. But I also thought, you know, in reading up on this, I noticed it as I was watching and Candace and I were talking about it. And then I kind of saw this reflected in the interviews with the folks on production. But this is one where they really try to build out as many sets as possible. And I think that also shows. And so they tried to really, Kate Herron was talking about trying to save the visual effects work for creating things like Eliath that you obviously needed that for, and basically free up the VFX team to focus on that stuff and not creating environments. And so I do think that like the TVA is so well imagined and it's just like it's all the scenes there. It has this feels like tangible in a way that I think not all phase four projects have, you know, and we've talked a lot about that, but I like that decision. And I like that there was an intentionality there because, you know, I think that that's the way you almost have to handle it with mm-hmm. these Disney Plus shows. And we've talked about that in other series, but it's like whenever they just know to pick their battles and like how much of a budget you have. And if you really try to lean into like trying to make it look like you're making an MCU film, I think that's where these have fallen short. But if they know how Good to point. Do that strategically, it holds up really well.
Well, and it works on both sides because in turn, Eliath actually looks pretty great in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And the way that Richard Grant's Glorious Purpose character is doing the Asgardian buildings, like all that looks mm-hmm. pretty good for all special effects, clearly. So I agree with that. I also want to highlight, just for me, I'm going to isolate one person. Owen Wilson's acting and yes. the fact that Owen Wilson is in the MCU and the fact that Owen Wilson is now on board with doing more stuff. I saw a couple mm-hmm. of cool TikTok promo videos where he just talked. I mean, I heard him specifically say, I really thought I would like my time on Loki season one. I didn't realize I would love it as much as I did. So I want to do more, which mm-hmm. obviously as a fan and loyal to the MCU, I just love hearing that. Like I like people wanting to be involved more because it was so much fun, all that. But also just for my personal preferences, he's like a perfect person to have involved. He's my sense of humor. And I just really took note of his acting this time around, his comedic timing, but also his dramatic moments. I like when he gets frustrated and angry, the moment where he says, I can play the tough heavy notes keys. Too, heavy keys too.
Yeah.
And then specifically even when he's about to get pruned and he's talking about the jet ski, like that moment was legitimately moving for me. And so in summary, Owen Wilson is a massive highlight of this show.
Yeah. The little micro expressions that he has, they work really well, especially in the context of a series that is so based on these big dialogue moments. I think that the chemistry between him and Hiddleston is in some ways unrivaled. Like, I don't know that we've gotten, because we've talked a lot about projects that have tried to do the buddy cop thing almost. And I know that's not quite what this is, but it winds up becoming that. And I think it's like this perfect, Waldron was saying that it's this, Mobius is the hero in a show about anti-heroes, like the kind of classic, like good guy trying to do the right thing. But he's got like that little bit of mischief in him, so he can really like meet Loki where he is. He's almost like a fan of Loki in spite of himself.
He says that.
And so it's like that you see them kind of coming towards each other and meeting in the middle. Just a really interesting dynamic. And above all, the fact that he's kind of like a civil servant and surrounded by all of these, like he's talking about bringing in vampires and gods and titans. And it's like his mustache. It's just that the whole, obviously Mobius is a character from the comics, but I think that the way Owen Wilson embodies that character, so much of the heart of the show is in that.
I also just love that style of humor. The under your breath comments. Like it's like the Bateman, Will Ferrell, Steve Carell, Robert Downey Jr., like that kind of thing. Like, for example, the sequence, which is in my screen recap, of Loki explaining, you know, the Asgard with the salt.
Oh, right.
And like just all the faces and comments under his breath, like the Hulk is salt. Come on. No, don't do that. Like that stuff all just makes me laugh.
Right.
That feels so much like Bateman to me.
Right, right.
Or Vince Vaughn, honestly. Like, that's the dynamic they kind of have together, you know, which is so fun. Anyway, so that's another highlight.
Something else kind of big picture that I think works here. I love that you never quite know where the show is going while you're watching it. Like, I was not that excited for this when it was first announced, I remember.
Me too.
And I guess kind of two things I want to say about that. One, I think it's crazy to me that I am now as invested in this alternate version of Loki as I am, because I was like, I've always really loved Tom Hiddleston's performance, particularly in like the Avengers movie, but I was never like a diehard Loki fan in the first place. And then you and I were both like so into the way that his story ultimately concluded in Infinity War that I thought that it was messing with a good thing. And so on the one hand, they have kind of proven me wrong when it comes to, can I care about an alternate version of a character sufficiently? And they also proved me wrong in that I love that it has not, for me, taken away from Infinity War at all. Like on this last rewatch, it just kind of hits home like, no, like that, what, like Loki died. Like the version of Loki that we knew and followed all through the MCU did die, and that was his end. He wasn't resurrected or brought back. So like that, we still maintain that finality. And I just think that the way that they were able to handle all of that was really impressive on a big picture. Slightly more granular on an episode by episode basis, I saw Waldron saying that his initial idea for the show was to basically every episode change what people thought was coming. Like if you thought it was going to be a show about like, oh, it's just Loki and Mobius like teaming up and going in and trying to find this variant the whole time, well, then you find her at the end of episode two. And now it's like, oh, you think it's going to be Loki and Sylvie teaming up and trying to get back and take down the TVA. And it's like kind of that, but then it's not, because they get captured by the TVA and like their whole, like you almost think that they are going to hijack the Ark. Like the way that they set that up, it feels like an inspirational moment and they're running towards it. And it's like, he does a really good job of pulling out the rug from under you. And so it's just, I think for me, one of the big what works for this, maybe the biggest one, is just like the constant surprises and the exceeding expectations, but also just like leaving you in suspense and in the dark. And that's what I love about the way the first season ends, like we said earlier.
Totally agree. I'll add that on the first point, yes, I also wasn't super stoked. So also just, we got to give props to the team because they did get us invested. So props on the actual execution of it too, mm-hmm. because now I do care. Secondly, a twist I'll add, I love how they handle the entire timekeepers part of this whole thing. So like in the first couple of episodes, you're legitimately thinking there's no way this can be real. You're thinking like Loki, like this is,
right.
These are space lizards. This can't be true.
Right.
But then they have all these statues of them and Ravonna talks about them as if they are true. And there's a cool scene with Ravonna and Mobius where Mobius doesn't even know, like he hasn't seen them. And that's like, uh-huh. Oh gosh, they can't be real. She's making this up. Cause she's like, well, I talked to them yesterday and they're angry. It's like, okay, come on. But then I think it's the beginning of episode four, you get this shot of Ravonna going up the elevator and you just get this cool edit of through the fog, seeing three different sets of eyes and their outlines basically. And you're like, oh my gosh, the timekeepers are actual real space lizards.
Uh-huh.
Unraveling time. And you're allowed to think that for like 30 minutes, but then the reveal of they cut their heads off, they're just robots, it's not a real thing. But then immediately, as soon as you do that, you're thinking just what Loki's thinking, which is, but then who created these things and why? Like, where is the person creating this?
Right. And the really subtle see you soon that we get from Jonathan Majors, who's voicing all three of the timekeepers there, which is really fun.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I didn't know that. He's those voices.
Yeah. And I was looking for it this time because I don't think I had known that the last time I watched through this. And it is like, it's clearly Jonathan Majors when you're looking for it, but they're all pretty distinct voices. Like it's pretty good voice character acting. Like I was impressed, but it's so perfect because you're like,
that makes sense. He set it up.
Right.
I that's a question I want to answer in a second when we come back, because I do want to follow up on how much do you think Ravonna knows about He Who Remains? Like, is she directly interacting with him? Is she getting orders through the timekeepers and she's just not allowed to get close enough to realize they're fake? I mean, does she know the whole thing is planned and they're just in on it together? Let's get into that later. The last thing I want to shout out as far as what works, it just needs to be said again, the actual heady dialogue is really fantastic. Mm-hmm. The long conversations about free will versus is your future predetermined? Where are you from? Does it sound ridiculous when you meet someone from something else? Like, you know, that whole conversation, the conversation, obviously, like we talked about with He Who Remains, and just in general, Owen Wilson's character, Mobius, having to wrestle with, maybe I am a human from this, and what does that mean? And if I can go anywhere, what does it mean for the end of time or the beginning of time? And like, does it all matter if you know the ending? And you know, like all of that stuff is just really heady psychological stuff that I really appreciate.
I'm so glad that you brought that up because I was going to forget, but that was like one of my biggest takeaways, especially watching the first episode as I was getting back into this. You know, we were so caught up at the time in trying to figure out what this meant for the MCU and how it impacted the kind of time travel the system that we had seen set up in Endgame. And which there's nothing wrong with that. But now that we can kind of back up and have a little bit more context, the way that they tackle that question of predestination and free will is so impressive to me. Yep. Because I remember one of my first things that kind of troubled me, and I think you and I talked about this on the podcast at the time, was we feel a little bit like Loki. Like, okay, so did everything that happened in the MCU that we were so invested in, we're now finding out that that was orchestrated by He Who Remains? And so does that kind of lessen it a bit? And I think what I love, and this is, I guess, obvious, but I'm just now reflecting on it more because it wasn't obvious at the time. It's not that. It's not that He Who Remains is making people act a certain way. It's that he's just eliminating any one or any timeline where that isn't what happens. So it's this, like, it is predestination and that's the only thing that he would ever allow to happen. But it's also free will and that what happened was the choice of each of those characters. And it's a really, like, that's a nuanced thing for Waldron to be able to get across just in that first episode when he's also introducing so many other elements. And I think Loki's such the perfect character to do that with. So that's something that I don't think I was so excited about just how ambitious it was initially, but I don't know that I fully understood how well executed it was.
We're going to talk about what didn't work and some lingering questions after a quick word from these sponsors. So a few of our listeners are going to have to earmuff it here. And I think you know who you are out there. Okay, so just be careful here. I'm going to point out a couple things that I don't love. And I know for some people, this is their number one Disney Plus show ever. Some people, at least their best Marvel show. Okay, I love the finale so much that the finale and probably the first episode, like a giant U-curve, do so much heavy lifting in my rankings. That the last thought I have is always the finale, so it goes way up in my preference rankings. On a rewatch, oftentimes these projects are going up in my rankings for me. Like, we just got off Love and Thunder, rising in my rankings. Moon Knight, rising in my rankings. Here, I specifically want to isolate a take I had when this first came out, and I feel stronger about it now than I ever did. I think Lamentis is not only a missed opportunity, it borders on That Makes Me Sad. Lamentis is an episode I think is bad. I think it's a bad episode. Wow. And it really lulls the show for me. And I know all of the counterpoints. I know the counterpoint of like, well, we had to get them isolated so they can do some, you know, connecting and build. But the connecting feels forced. The writing in the episode to me feels really bad. I even wrote down some specific lines. Like I just, some of the dialogue doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit the characters. It doesn't, it pulls me out of the show. Like for example, they're running and she's like, I don't need your help. You don't have to help me. And Loki yells back, you're so weird. That's not a line Loki would yell. You're so weird. I don't love like when Sylvie goes, get out of my way, or you're in my way. And Loki goes, you are my way. Okay, come on. Like that's not good writing to me. And you isolate the best part of the show and you take it out of the show, which is Owen Wilson. So the buddy cop thing is gone for a whole episode.
Right.
And there's a lot more lines like that. Like, for example, why does Loki, who's a genius, think that once he already talks to the random villager who blasts Sylvie with her gun, why does he think that he's having conversation in his normal voice? Why does he think now shifting into her long-lost husband is all of a sudden going to work? He just talked to her as a traveler. There's stuff like that I'm like, this. There's just so many loopholes. And it is a massive detour just to get long bits of exposition that aren't working for me. I have a hard time sticking with the episode. Like the dialogue about love and Loki getting drunk and like, it doesn't, yes, there are some redeeming qualities. Like it's fun to see him smash the cup and go another or reference things on Asgard or find out that he had a special relationship with his mother and other versions of Loki maybe didn't. All that stuff is cool. But like, there's just a lot of it that I feel like we're like wasting time. I think it looks a little weird with the green screen Lamentis stuff in the background the whole time. It feels a little soundstagey. The end chase where it's not soundstagey, like where they're actually building those sets and I've seen that and they assembled, that's cool.
Right.
But all of that happens for them to then just get picked up in a portal and go back as if none of it happened. The whole thing feels a sidetrack. And not only is it sidetracking, it's just not well done. So I know that's the hottest take ever. Greg hates me right now. Like he oh my gosh, he's so angry. But I've heard all the arguments. I've heard them. I just don't like it. I don't like it.
Fair.
There you go. Okay, yeah. So sorry. Well, that's the biggest drawback for me. Sorry.
No, I mean I enjoyed it this time, actually. I noticed some of those things. I don't think it's the strongest episode of the series. It's probably the weakest. But I also think that some of those moments I have gone up for me. And I, again, it's hard to gauge whether that's just familiarity. We could get into each one of the kind of the ways I would no prize some of the possible plot holes there. But again, I think that we have talked about that episode has been talked about a good bit to your point. Yeah. So you have heard the arguments. People have heard the arguments for it. I think that it is the more for me, part of it is now that I know the Sylvie character from the other episodes, when I go back, I think I appreciate those interactions more. I do think at the time it was a little like it was just a
let's go. Let's do something. Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, it was hard to me a little bit too because there's such a sinister vibe to that variant, and then to go kind of straight to the sort of their quarreling thing is a little bit of a like take bickering. The air out of the.
That's the thing. It's like bickering. It's like
right,
petty.
Right.
And I'm with you. Like the shot prior. Two things. She's like, she's taking over people in the store and it's kind of creepy and it's dark. And like the first shot in the first episode, when you can't even see her face, she's just wearing like a hood and she's lighting people on fire. And like, that is so sinister. And I love that part of it. And then all of a sudden, fast forward, like an hour later, we're like joking about like, well, good, now cut your heart out. I just don't like the dialogue. I don't like them being petty. Like, my mind's too strong. I don't know. It just all feels forced to me.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I see. I would say that because I don't have a ton of what doesn't work stuff about this show. I think it's clearly top tier in the Disney Plus world. There are moments, you know, you've talked about some of the outside the main cast characters and maybe even some of the more minor characters in the main cast. So we don't need to get into that a ton because I think that that's something else our listeners have heard us get into. But even some of the moments, like story-wise, like and maybe it's because of the execution, but I have never loved the Sylvie talking to Loki through random people at the Rocks Cart store. It's just it doesn't, I don't know.
I like that part.
See, I don't like the big guy with like the Southern accent and then like the store employee that's like, oh, bless. It's just like,
you sound just like him. Oh my gosh. Was that you? That literally sounded like you did it. That was the exact tone of voice and everything.
It always just makes me like, it's not bad, but it just, I don't think it is the story choice because I like that she's able to basically distract Loki and then also be setting the charges in the background. And it makes for a good reveal of her. So like, I think I like the story element. I think it's just, I wish that they had picked different kinds of people for her to like, I don't know. It just, it feels a little cheesy to me.
I like it. I like it.
Wow. Well, I like Lamentus, Kyle. So
yeah, no, that's okay. That's what I'm saying. Hey, save space. I don't know why I like it. I just like the creepiness of it, I guess, as far as you don't know what's going on at the time, especially.
Right.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. I have one last hot take. I mean, crazy hot take. It's kind of two parts. This is so hard to explain. I love the show. I think it's top tier. I have it as my preference number three, critic number two. So that's the disclaimer here. I think the finale is so strong that some of these things I'm saying get masked for me in my memory of the show. And this is maybe the hottest take. We talked about how they did get us invested to this alternate version of Loki, which is true. For me, I would say that all is about 80% true. I still, after multiple times watching the show, leave feeling a little bit like, I don't know that I love how much they belittled the Infinity Stones, as an example. I also just don't know that all the performances get me bought in and invested very much. Like, there are multiple scenes where I think to myself, I'm watching, I'm like, wow, Owen Wilson's killing it, and I wonder if he feels weird acting with a person that's not acting as well as him. And that sounds horrible to say. I think sometimes even Loki and Sylvie are doing some things that, whether it's the writing or whatever, that I don't know that it is even the best acting performances. There are moments for me that I'm pulled out from even the main characters. So there's just something about it that I am in, but I'm not all the way in. I'm like wading in the water, and there's...
Yeah.
All these little factors, like a dialogue here or there in Lamentus, or a performance here or there from like B-52.
No, I think that's fair.
Or a Loki part that seems over the top that doesn't feel like it'd fit. And then there's a bigger issue of there are still times, we talked about this ad nauseum when it first came out, there are still times where I think to myself, would the original 2012 Loki do that? Like, has he been humbled enough to do that? Would he be that such and such and such this early on? And so I'm not going to beat that to death. I just think for me, the finale is amazing. I'm never going to be as pulled in as I get pulled into WandaVision or Moon Knight. So let's talk about, you can respond to that, but then I want to talk about just a few questions previewing season two.
Yeah. Well, first, and I'm going to drop this and then test your ability to move on. But
oh boy.
One, I do think in terms of just Disney Plus as a whole, I found myself thinking a lot about Andor on this watch, in part just because people, these are shows that I think are often in the conversation for the best Disney Plus projects. And I still do think that it took me a while to get through Andor because I was not hooked immediately. Like I wasn't invested immediately just because I wasn't like, I have to see the next episode, which is always weird. Like, I came away like, wow, that was almost perfect. And I kind of have nothing out, like, that it feels like a step up quality wise. But I also wasn't, I don't know that I ever felt like I feel at the end of some of these Loki episodes until we got to like the back half of that series when things really start to ramp up. So I do think quality wise, just consistency, it is not quite top tier. But I do think that, like we've always said, the highs are so high. Mm-hmm. But I also just want to say on the WandaVision front, and this is about Loki, not about WandaVision, but I just think that...
Careful.
I think that WandaVision, in some way, for me, gets graded on a curve. Because what it's doing allows for a level of like cheekiness and even cheesiness because of the sitcom format. Now, I would, you know, I think you could push back and look at like episode 8 of that series and show that when they're not doing that, it can still hit like 100% of the time. But it's like, there's a part of me where I'm like, if I were to isolate certain moments from WandaVision the same way that we've talked about certain moments in Loki, I think that I would have those concerns. But I think the difference is I kind of dismiss those as, yeah, but, you know, they're doing the like... Full House kind of style acting, which is maybe true in most cases. I don't know that that's true in all cases. I don't know that every actor that shows up in WandaVision and every line that we get in WandaVision is like fire. But I think that's just it's why it will always be hard for me to compare any other Disney Plus project to WandaVision, because it was doing something that is so different that I just don't know if you can ever take any drama or comedy or anything and really easily match it up, like scene for scene, episode for episode.
You are testing my ability. Look, all I'll say is, for me, it's not a objective thing. I'm saying subjectively. For my experience, I get pulled into WandaVision and I sometimes get pulled out of Loki. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to go on a huge, you know, argument of why it's so much better or any of that. But I emotionally, I'm not as connected. That's all.
No.
So for whatever reason, all the factors, that's where I'm at. okay. Anyways, there are things that really do get me connected. And some of those things I want to talk about. I specifically want to know, what do you think? How much does Ravonna know? That's one of the biggest lingering things for me, because she's going to be in this new show. Let's start there. Because like I watched the whole series again and I left thinking, I really don't know. I think she knows the timekeepers aren't real and that she's kind of just going through the drill. And maybe even Kang's character communicates with her for real through the timekeepers, maybe like via a microphone. Maybe that's how she actually, maybe she's never seen Kang's face, even though she knows the timekeepers are being like manipulated, Wizard of Oz style. But I want to know how much she knows.
Are you talking about in the course of the show or at the end?
Either. Is all so of it like put on by her, or is she learning?
I think she's a true believer throughout the series. And I think she is as shocked as anyone when the timekeepers are revealed to be fake, because I think so. Cause then we get some moments in episode five and six where it seems to be like she's wrestling with that. She's trying to figure out like what's going on and where she fits in. And so like, and it's like the conversations that she's having with Miss Minutes and even with Sylvie, like, I don't know. I get the sense that she's trying to play catch up. Now, I think that what you just said is probably right, that especially...
But pause right there. How much is she in on it, though? Because, like, the conversation with Miss Minutes about the spaceship to the void at the end of time, they both know it's not going to work. So she knows there is, a void at the end of time that they can't just travel to. So has she been there a bunch?
I don't think so. Even then, I just feel like she's bluffing with Miss Minutes. I mean, I think she maybe knows something from the timekeepers that maybe things aren't totally what the TVA has said that they are, but I still think that she, like, I think that what's interesting about that character is she really believes in the mission of the TVA, even after she finds out it's all kind of a fraud. Like, she's still believing in it, which is why I think she's looking for a cause now. And if Miss Minutes, my take is that she tells her, you know, like, he is like passing along these instructions. And I always thought in that moment, she doesn't even really know who he is at first. And then once she realizes that there's kind of a way for her to continue on in the work she's been doing, that's when she jets. At this point, knowing that she's a variant, which I think comes as a shock, knowing like all of the stuff, I think it's like a...
You think even that's a shock? Wow. Okay.
I could be wrong.
Me too. But I was almost under the impression that, like, for example, she knew she was a variant, but she's just putting this all on to keep the TVA going. But I don't know that either.
I mean, I guess she is trying to, like, she's trying to keep C20 from,
right,
from saying what she's saying. But but I always took that as, like, the timekeeper's telling her that, you know, that's some kind of, like, that's something that can't be allowed to get out to the TVA, not necessarily because it's the truth, but because it's dangerous, like, in this sort of, you know, keeping with the Big Brother, like, no free thought vibe that Loki's going with for the TVA. But I would think that we'll get some more background on that. But
my other massive, massive, massive question is, I don't even know what the plot's about.
Moving forward.
Like, yeah. Like, what do you think, right, Loki season two, how is that even tying in? Is it going to start tying into incursions? Is that what they're preventing?
I mean, so we've seen in the trailers, you know, that Loki's like being pulled in and out of different time spots.
Why?
Or, yeah, I don't know, which I kind of love. I do feel like there's like an added level of like secrecy around this, which gets me excited. It feels kind of like Multiverse of Madness and that they're cooking something up. Really, like, everyone is left in kind of a cliffhanger spot, at least when we're looking at the main characters. Like, He Who Remains dies, but we know that, I mean, we get that, again, the see you soon line. And then obviously we've seen Ant-Man Quantumania and all the Kang variants there. And we know Jonathan Majors is coming back in Loki season two. So like but I still don't know what all of that looks like, how that's going to play into Ant-Man. But I'm really excited to just get some Kang updates and some Ravonna updates, maybe in conjunction, because obviously, like we talked about when we had Kelly and Lansing on to talk about their Kang comic, that's the, you know, the history there is that Kang and Ravonna are like romantically connected throughout the comics. So that has yet to occur.
On the Kang front, really quickly, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, we've seen the one shot of him being Victor Timely, the scientific magician or whatever, and then Loki saying, oh, he's terrifying. So is that a version of Kang that is able to time travel and he's jumping in to interfere with wherever Loki is at in time? So that looks like, let's say, 1850. I made that up. But like, it looks like that kind of era.
Mm-hmm.
Is he jumping in because Loki's bouncing in and out of time? Or is that just a universe where Kang was actually born in 1820? And that's not a Kang that's going to go on to be in the future and solve the time problem. You know what I'm saying? Is that just a version of Kang that's like 200 years before his time?
So that my read on that is, and this is informed by the comics, I think every Kang variant is from the 31st century. I think
so. Like, theoretically, there was a Kang born.
Right.
In all multiverses, he doesn't get born until the 31st century.
Like, the origin of Kang is always, you know, in the comics that he's born in the future and then he has time traveling capabilities.
Okay.
And it's just kind of these different, it gets really confusing. And I honestly don't know that the MCU version is going to be a perfect overlay, because they're making it a little bit more multiversal and less straight up time travel-y based on what we've, but regardless, yeah, I think that the idea, if we're looking at like Victor Timely in the comics and just different Kang iterations, is that he is in that time as Kang. I don't know that we can say he's in that time. Like, I don't think he's necessarily undercover trying to catch Loki. Maybe he is, if that's what we have going on. Like, he's back there as using that as a way to get to Loki and or Mobius. Or that's just like, that's part of that Kang variant's journey, because he's going to go back in time and make himself into this kind of like wizard by using future technology to, you know, kind of wow people in the 19th century.
Okay, back to the cliffhangers for each person. Then Loki and Mobius are in unique spots, because Loki is now back in the wrong TVA. Maybe there's something with, well, he went through a portal like normal, then the multiverse was broken. I still don't know why he would be time skipping. But then Mobius, remember, was going to go back to the TVA we knew and try to burn it down or whatever, burn it to the ground.
Right.
But there's multiple versions of Mobius now. Obviously.
Yeah, see, I have no idea what's going on with Mobius. Like, I obviously, they are talking like they know each other in that post-credit scene from Ant-Man, but that could be a miss, like, that could be a red herring. Like, it could just be that Loki's convinced another version of Mobius that his story is true, but Mobius still doesn't remember it, or maybe he's, like, I guess the Loki thing makes sense to me in that he is like, he's now like a straight up anomaly. Like, he's not really a variant anymore because the multiverse is like open, but he is like, he wasn't there when things were like reset in that TVA. And so maybe that's why he's being pulled to different places, because he doesn't really have like a, it's like a chaos because there's timeline that he belongs in anymore.
Good point.
But then, yeah, you're right. I guess there are, I don't know the effect that the multiverse breaking open would have on the TVA, because we've only ever experienced the TVA as the thing that keeps all of that contained. So I don't know if there are now infinite versions of the TVA.
Good point. There shouldn't be, right? Because that was the one thing outside of all that.
Right.
But, yeah, but there obviously is.
Because, but it was transformed. I guess the idea is I don't know if it's the Conqueror, because we've seen the Conqueror and Ant-Man, but a different variant is the one that set up the TVA. So maybe it's like basically it looks the same, but the difference is, instead of it being made by someone that's kind of coming from a benevolent point of view, it's someone that is more like militaristic, but it's still just the one TVA. But then it's like, this is when my head starts to hurt, because all of this is like, if it's outside of time, why would anything impact it? But then it did have to be created by someone that was inside of time.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts. Yes, that hurts. Right. Like, at some point in time, he removed himself from time.
Right.
And then Sylvie stabs He Who Remains. Well, that version of Sylvie is theoretically still in the Citadel. Like, I don't think just by killing him, she should just transport somewhere, right?
Right. No, and that's where I wanted to wrap, unless you had another like lingering question, because something I don't think I had really thought about was, yes, yeah, Sylvie is like that. That's what's interesting, right? Like, we get back to the TVA, and through Loki, we see, oh, look, like, you know, this is what happened. They killed He Who Remains, and now we've got all of these Kang variants out there. And so I think the assumption is, look, now the scarier version is in charge, but shouldn't it be Sylvie that's in charge? Like, wasn't that the whole, like,
but until another Kang came around and found her, I guess. Like eventually, right?
Yeah, maybe. That's the thing. Because I guess he was saying originally the plan was like, I'm just going to retire and you can have it. But if you kill me, you know, all of my variants are going to come out and make this a hellscape. And so I don't know what his thought was, like what he expected to happen to the TVA if he died. I know that he expected there to just be general calamity, but yeah, because it seems like the TVA in and of itself is like the bureaucracy that he's using to prevent the multiversal war. So if the multiversal war is now happening, what role does the TVA have? And yeah, like I'm so curious if we're going to get back to the Citadel, if Loki's there or if Sylvie's there, and if I think that could be a really interesting place to take that character, like to kind of get.
Let's go.
I don't think this is where we're going, but I would be interested if by the turn of Sylvie kind of getting pulled into that, like now being a part of that system and what that means for, again, the TVA, but I guess the entire flow of time, and how all of this impacts, I mean, this entire saga that
I know that's what
I'm unfolding.
Where are we going? Like, how is this one going to end? And was it leading us to make my brain hurt even more? You know, Sylvie stabs He Who Remains, and then we see those branches. And I started thinking about, okay, the other timelines that are not the sacred timeline, what is their history? So are we saying then, because of that, follow me on this, right? So we're saying that for one alternate timeline, the moment Sylvie killed Kang, therefore stopping the ability to prune branches, that means it's all still rooted in the sacred timeline for these alternate timelines, right? Like at some point it came out of the sacred timeline, because before that everything was being pruned, so it's just sacred timeline. Then, as soon as she stabs him, now it's like, okay, let's say I walk down these stairs I'm not supposed to. Well, now I am from that point on starting a new timeline where Kyle walked down the stairs and he wasn't supposed to. So then what do I do after I get down there? And then that starts branching and branching. But does that mean that new timeline, the new multiverse's history, is still a shared history pre that moment where it started branching? Like, would that other timelines still know who Abraham Lincoln is, for example? Because we branched off post a certain moment.
No, I think so. Yeah. I mean, in the same way, I guess, that Loki remembers all the events of his life pre-Avengers, like in this series, because he's like, there's that shared history. It's just he also like, right. I mean,
is going to be a point. There's going to be a moment then. It's not all parallel timelines where it could be totally different and they don't have the same history. There was a moment where it all came from the same root.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the big question for me with the MCU theory, because I don't think that that's the case. If we're looking at like the comic book multiverse theory, like I think they're all over the place. Like it's like, you know, that universe begins in whatever way, and then like life combines in whatever way, and like different species develop. And so I think, like, if you look at it from the Hickman point of view, yeah, some will look really similar, some will look totally different, have like different planets and different civilizations. But I think in the MCU, for the most part, it seems to be built around this, like it's almost a combining of the time travel and multiverse tropes in a way that can really get confusing. And that's why, like, I think we dug into a lot of this for the Kang episode that I'm like almost tempted to go back and listen to before we get into next season. But I think the one thing that they did in this series to kind of leave the door open is Sylvie telling Loki in episode four, the beginning, about how, you know, the universe wants, or multiverse wants, chaos. And so, like, her being born the goddess of mischief, like, that's clearly not like if just her being born was someone stepping off the path, then she would have been pulled out when she was born, like as someone other than like the normal Lokis that we see. But then also we've got like alligator Loki, right? And it's like, well, that's clearly not like there's not this one thing that could have happened that would now create like an alligator Loki. Like, that's just like a different thing entirely that we're dealing with, or like boastful Loki. Like, I think that we start to get to, okay, this is not a like Loki took the Tesseract and so now it's like everything that we saw except this one change. It's like these are different realities.
They're
seemingly
they're so far maybe through the branches, right? Like a tree, that now they're so far away from the root that you can get an alligator. But I'm with you. It's not like one decision.
Well, but it's like with Sylvie, because like that's a question. Like, what was my Nexus event? And so it's not like takeaway for me is that it's not that like there was an event other than her just being born the goddess of mischief. It was something else that happened. And because then it's like if you go backwards, then it would have been like, however, like the events that led to her being born, like, because maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe she has like a different like lineage than the Lokis that we know do. Maybe she, that may have been established and I just forgot anyway. But, and so that I think the TVA would have had to have gone back and been like, yeah, nope, this isn't it. Like, it's supposed to be like Loki's a frost giant and this is how it happens. And so, but that's not what happened. So there, I think that the MCU cheat code for it is going to be, you know, a manifestation of chaos, like, you know, the life finds a way kind of a thing. But we'll see if they dig into it more. I am like, that's a big question for me to see how this interacts again with both the Kang biography that we got in Ant-Man and the kind of multiverse introduction that we got in Multiverse of Madness.
I love it. I have no idea. And we may literally find out in 5 days. So,
boom, 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 boom.
It's those echoing strings that do it for me. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get this thing rolling. I'm so tired, but my mind is getting framed. I'm getting in a better spot.
Yep.
Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. The first episode of Loki Season 2 airs, and we will be discussing it the following Monday. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Legit, right now, subscribe to this podcast. Click follow. If you like it, if you've made it this far, then certainly click follow and subscribe.
Smash that subscribe button.
Smash that subscribe. We need better thumbnails like Jeff Klubness said. I'm working on my thumbnail game. Let's get a thumbnail here. Help me with that one. Loki Season 2. Okay, perfect. Thank you for listening. We'll see
Marvel's
you next time.
In the trash can.
Talking about Loki Season 2 right back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Spreadsheets, clunky software, 100 different logins just to run your business?
There's a better way. Odoo. one simple, connected platform that handles sales, inventory, accounting, and more, so you can focus on growing, not juggling. Make the switch today at odoo.com. That's O-D-O-O.com.